Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from irishsportsdaily.com. I am your host, Greg Flamong, and with me, as always, is Jamie Uwayama, Mr. Jamie University. It is Thursday, May 16th, and we are going to be talking about Notre Dame over-unders, win totals brought out by Vegas. Those are officially released, I guess. Those have been put out. And Notre Dame's, no one has a higher over-under win total than Notre Dame does. Tied with a couple of teams, but we're going to talk about that. It makes them one of the favorites in college football in 2024. Is Notre Dame ready for that sort of moniker? Are they ready to kind of carry that into the 2024 season and hopefully into the playoffs? We're going to talk about that. We're going to build the perfect Notre Dame wide receiver. We've done this for quarterbacks. We've done this for linebackers. We're going to do it for wide receivers today. And kind of some big news, Jamie, in the gamer world. The EA Sports college football game is officially going to be released on July 19th. Huge for the gamers out there. We've been without the game for a very long time. I haven't played video games in a very long time. But there is some news breaking on that front, Jamie. So we're going to talk about that. And all a bunch of other things that come up in the chat. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe to our channel. Please hit the like button on this video. Please hit the notification bell so you know whatever it is, we are going live. Links to the podcast are in the description below if you prefer the audio format. And as always, we are rolling out a new special from ESQ Clothing through the end of May. We did it for the spring game. We did it for the spring game weekend. And giving 40% off the Play Like a Champion Today sport coats that is worn by Notre Dame alums all over the place. It's worn by Notre Dame football players on the player walk. It's custom made. It's great. It's one of the best things you can buy. Father's Day coming up. Hook up that man in your life, be it your father, your father-in-law, your brother, whoever it might be who's a big Notre Dame fan would appreciate something like this. Like I said, 40% off, usually retails at $795. Now it is $495. It's a great deal. It's as good as you're going to get till the end of May. So this has been extended. It was only going to be one weekend. They got so much interest in it. People were hitting up Goss saying, I missed it. Can I still get in on the deal? He extended the deal to the end of May. And if you want to take advantage of this special from ESQ Clothing, email atorner@esqclothing.com. That's atorner@esqclothing.com. Or give them a call at 312-757-8500 to take advantage of this special. It's huge, Jamie. People are calling all over the place. The demand is off the chain. Okay, Jamie. The game is out, July 19th. Is this a big deal for you? Are you going to purchase it? We talk about it. Do you have a console? Do you have something? Are you going to purchase the NCAA 25 game when it comes out July 19th?
I mean, I'm not purchasing it for myself because that means that I gotta buy like a PS5 or something like that, and I'm not gonna do that because it just wouldn't be worth it for me. But this is the workaround for me and for other people like me. Like, I'm gonna buy it for my nephew, so that he can play it, he can get good at it. And I'll also, and then so I can go play against him when I'm with him, I guess, whatever. But I won't be able to play like online against him, which he can do with his friends or whatever kind of thing. I'll stick to just when I'm there. I can be like that booster who's like whispering in the ear of him to be like, hand that bag over to somebody, to this kid, so you can get it, and I'll help him navigate, like I used to navigate back in the day with
dynasty mode.
Dynasty mode of many years of doing that game of like, I can't even remember what year I ended up getting to when I was I must have played for like 20 seasons in the future, and it was fantastic. It was great.
And you did it without NIL, Jamie. You did it the right way. And, you know, good job by you on that. You developed your program. You love to see that through recruiting. The culture was where it is. I understand your facilities were top notch. So look, good job. You know how to run a program. Congratulations on that. So when this game was coming out, I always thought, and I just don't play video games anymore, right? So it's just, I'm not gonna go spend, like you said, hundreds of dollars on these things that I'm not gonna use it. Like, and I'm not gonna ask Amy, like, hey, can I spend all this money on a video game so I can play it all the time? I'm not gonna do that. So that was my mindset. But the other day we were talking, and our son is 7, and he's starting to like find like games to watch on YouTube. So you know how these gamers, like, they'll play like a baseball game and they will put it on YouTube. And so he'll watch that. And I'm like, well, look, if he's spending time watching someone else play the game,
this is always wild to me.
He should just play the game. And so we had this conversation, and I wasn't even thinking of the football game when we had it. I was like, it's time. He needs to get a console. Like, he needs to play himself, right? And there's other things that he can do. And then everyone's talking about, like, you know, Fortnite and stuff and all those things. And I'm like, look at Rajon, I'm gonna get to that in a second. I don't know about the shooting games and all that stuff, but like the sports games, why not play sports games? I don't have a problem with it. I don't. And so it's perfect. It's got the games coming out. He's got to learn about football sooner or later. And here's the other thing, Jamie, you know, my daughter, I've been coaching her team in flag football. This is a great thing for them, because boys are more apt to kind of pick up the game of football, and girls, because it's like not a girl sport, they don't follow the game like that. Well, now it's like a perfect excuse to get the girls involved in learning about the game of football. Flag football is becoming a very big thing, at least in Southern California. It's going to be a varsity sport very soon in high school.
It's going to be Olympics, game. I think, right?
Yeah, it'll eventually be an Olympic sport. They're going to give out scholarships for this sort of thing in college. And if they're not giving out scholarships, at least it's something you can do in college, right? And so I just think that it's a good way for all the kids to learn how to play. And and Rajon says, I'll be playing with them. That's right. What are you going to do? He doesn't want to play against the computer every time. He's going to want to play against dad. It's a perfect thing for me. I'm very excited about it. Rajon said, get him a chessboard. So he is in chess club. He loves to play chess. He's playing chess all the time. He loves that game. So we're always playing chess, but like, he doesn't want to just do one thing, right? Like, he wants to be doing lots of stuff. So it works out perfectly. I'm very excited about it. Educational tool. Absolutely. Did you learn the game? Playing, like, I learned a lot about sports and football and strategy, and like, you know, this works against this, and oh, they're running this defense, I'm gonna run these route concepts. Like, you learn about that stuff playing Madden and playing college football. So I think it's great.
Well, my dad was a football coach, so I already kind of had a good idea with this kind of stuff. But I mean I definitely, like, I think you can. It is something that you it can teach people about the game. Like, it 100% can teach people about the game. So I think it's great. Like, and I hope that, I think one of the things too with the NCAA game compared to Madden is it's like, you can do that dynasty mode and you can really like build a program, and there's something more about like loyalty to a team that's built up. And it's not like people have their own NFL teams too, but it's just different because of like how the longevity of guys' careers and all that. There's less turnover on the roster, so you're not having to, you know, recruit and bring in all these guys all at the same time. And it's just a little different, like, when you're doing that kind of thing. And that's what I just kind of love. That was like the best part about the whole game, was the dynasty and like kind of building it up. Because anyone could, like Madden, it's just more about like, you're just kind of playing. Like that's, I think it's more like, hey, I'm going to play my friends and I'm going to do this, whatever. The other one, like you can really like play just with you. Like it's just yourself playing. Right. And it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. CFB Hertz says, I learned that the proper way to play quarterback is to sprint straight backwards before throwing a dime 70 yards downfield. Yeah. I mean, you got to know your team. You got to know your team and you got to know your players. And that's a good deal. So exciting time for everyone who's into that sort of thing. And another exciting time is football starting and we're into the off season and we're talking about, you know, we're projecting now. Spring's over. We're projecting into the season and the Vegas over-under win totals came out, Jamie. And wouldn't you know, the mom and pop shop, you know, little engine that could, Notre Dame, barely a top 30 program. They're out there at 10.5 wins at the highest level. There are five programs at 10.5 wins: Georgia, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, all projected with over under totals at 10.5. If you were betting, what would you take here? Would you take the under? Would you take the over on this? It's tough, right? Like you're saying 11-1 undefeated, right? That's what you're saying with Notre Dame. If you're betting the over, 10-2 is going to be an under. What would you take right now?
Well, first of all, I'm definitely not betting this. So just so
no, you're not betting it. Right. You're not.
Just to clarify. But
we're just having a conversation.
But if I would – I would recommend that if you were going to bet it to take the over, or to stay away, but I would lean, but if I had to lean one way, it would be the over. I think one of the things too, and with all these teams, it's part of it is a reflection of how good you are. And the other part is the reflection of the schedule.
Right.
And it's just the schedule that they play, right? Like, how things are set up. Like they just don't play. They don't have an Ohio State on the schedule this year. They don't even really have a Cincinnati from 2021 on the schedule. Right. And it's not that, you know, I mean, obviously it's like Florida State 9.5. It's like that's partly like Florida State's going to be good. They're going to be good, but they're not going to I think part of them winning 10 games is them playing in the ACC. You know, for sure. Like that's part of it too. And that's also, I mean, it's the same thing with Notre Dame as well. But like they're not like Georgia being where they are is more a reflection of Georgia, you know, than what it is. Or Ohio State being 10.5 is more a reflection of like how good they are. You know, Florida State, a lot of that is schedule. Right. A lot of that is scheduled. Mm-hmm. And like, man, I mean, I don't know about you too, but I'm like, even just looking at this list, like Miami 9.5. I mean, don't be the sucker that bets Miami, even though they might be really good. Just right. Don't do it. Cause like you just, they're just, I feel like you're giving away your money every time if you bet on Miami, just cause they just seem to blow too many games. Like, and it's not like a crystal ball thing. It's like from years and years. It's like a cultural thing there or something like that, but they're kind of stuck in there. I mean, Ole Miss at 9.5 feels like, I feel like Ole Miss is going to win at least 10 games. Like maybe I haven't looked at their schedule close enough, but like they're pretty loaded. They're pretty loaded. I don't see how they're going to lose something, but like Utah 9.5. Utah's going to be a pretty good team. They also play in the bad Big 12.
Right.
So
well, bad Big 12 who hasn't really played them, you know?
Yes.
And I mean, that could work against them as well. But like, to me, when you have like the Big 12 to me is like always just kind of in flux. Like Texas isn't in there anymore. And I just think when you get like a good operation, like Utah into a conference, like the Big 12, like they're just, they're a machine in that they've been doing the same thing for 20 years, you know, and I just like that really, I think that really lends itself to going into the Big 12 and like winning a bunch of games like you're talking about. When do you think the last time Notre Dame had a higher over under than Alabama?
Whew, great question. It's gotta be like, it's gotta be a couple decades, man. It's honestly like, it's gotta be like pre-Saban. I'm going to say like second year, Charlie Weiss, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably that. That's
what CFP Hurt says.
But like, that would probably be the only time.
It makes sense though. It does. Like there's a lot of questions there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of questions going along with that program. Like obviously the offense, you know, turning over with the coach from Washington, but like defensively, what's that going to be? I'm wondering what their defense is going to look like, because they've had some kind of shaky offenses there. Like last year, not a great offense, but defensively they were pretty strong. And they've been strong. They've always had a good defense. And now it's like, that's just not what Kalen DeBoer is known for. You know?
Yeah. I just wonder, because I see some people who in the chat who are like, yeah, they would bet the under. I just want to know where these people think the losses are coming. Because if you're going to say like, because you could say, I mean, easily Notre Dame could lose the Texas A&M game. It's going to be a tough game. You know, it's going to be a crazy atmosphere. Notre Dame has played these week one opening primetime games and struggled even against like teams that weren't. Yeah. And this is, I mean, obviously it's a different coaching staff and whatever, but, you know, a different team. But I just think that part of that is a reflection of just like how difficult it is in week one to go on the road and play in that atmosphere in week one. Like, you just can't, like, it would be much better. And I wrote about this in Six Thoughts too, like, make that a neutral site game. And I know they want the home and home, but like,
yeah,
get more of these neutral site games. Like, do the Alabama where they did the neutral site games for so many years. The Shamrock Series game should be the opener. You want to play a big opponent? Sure. Make it a neutral site game, you know, which, you know, that Notre Dame fans are probably going to outnumber the other team a lot of the times there at a neutral site game. So I just think it's that would be a better situation. But like, all the, like, you're saying that, like, I guess, you know, they could get upset.
I could easily make a case for it.
They could get upset by some of these games, but like
against a particular opponent, not against a particular opponent.
Like
we've seen Marcus Freeman, we've seen those teams lay. We've 2 years we've seen them lay eggs. Now, the reasons for it were different. Like obviously they lost to Marshall and Stanford in 22, right? You're laying an egg in those games. That didn't happen against lesser opponents last year, but against Louisville, like that's a bad performance. Like period. Louisville's good. I'm not saying they're not. That's a bad performance. Against Clemson offensively, that's a bad performance, you know? So like, I think that's where people, I'm not really necessarily advocating for that. Right. But I am saying like his teams have a history of just kind of like, hey,
but you're looking at these games. Those are road games
for sure.
They're not playing these road games this
but
year.
Marshall thing, and right? Stanford, but Marshall and Stanford weren't road games.
Yeah. But that was like, Tyler Buchner and Drew Pine. I'm sorry. Sure. Like,
got you.
It's 100%. It's 100%. The offense stunk. They stunk, guys. They were not good. I mean, whatever. I don't mean to take shots at those guys, but let's be honest here. Like, they were handcuffed, beyond handcuffed at quarterback. You know, so it's like, I just don't even think it's the same thing, right? Where like, easily they could, but like there was somebody in I saw somebody in a tweet who was like, yeah, I think 8-4. I'm like, 8-4? Like 8-4 is like Marcus Freeman is getting fired. Like that, yeah, that's
that
kind of
not great.
That would be a disaster against this schedule in his third year. Like it's not a tough schedule. the way
they don't have the team, the team is also good.
Yeah. And like if you look at it where like so Louisville last year, a lot of that in laying an egg is partially the schedule, right? And how they had those games back to back to back, these night games that are really, really tough. And just they don't have that gauntlet the same this year. Plus they get Louisville at home. But like even say Florida State could be really good and they might beat Notre Dame for sure. But like show me them coming into South Bend in November and doing well. And it's not going to be a nice day, guys.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a nice day. And they're going to come out and do well. Like I've seen like Florida State, and this is obviously going way back for years too, even before, like when Jimbo had them rolling, for whatever reason, they play like a Boston College up in Chestnut Hill and like, and just suck. And you're like, why? They're way better than Boston College. These Florida guys do not want to come up and play in this. It's a totally different environment for them. And they just are worse for it. So, in that way you could say, oh, well, Notre Dame getting overtaken by the Heat and Texas A&M and all this kind of stuff too. But I don't know. And I'm just not a believer in USC. Like I just think USC, I think the writing's going to be on the wall at the end of the year, Greg. I just think like kind of what you've been saying for a long time about Lincoln Riley. I think the more and more I've looked at it, the more and more I agree with you that like, think that's what it's going to be. He's going to have like, he's already going to be thinking about getting out at that point because their schedule's tough. And I went through this too. Like they don't have the talent. Like it's kind of crazy. Like they just, especially up front, like they haven't landed the transfers or recruited the blue chips, and the blue chips that they have on the roster are like freshmen.
Yeah.
Like freshman sophomores that aren't like ready to be studs or anything. So like, oh man, I think, I don't know. I don't want to go as far as say they're going to suck, but like, I mean, Zachariah Branch and Deuce Robinson better be just absolutely special or else they actually might suck.
Well, like why would they be better than last year? I know the defense will be better just because it kind of has to be, but like the offense, they lost Caleb Williams, you know, they lost their running back. They lost their top two wide receivers, maybe top three, depending how you feel about Mario Williams. Right. They've lost a lot. And like, that is what carries them. It has always carried them. Lincoln Riley has never had a really good defense there. So even if they on his team, it's never been a thing of theirs. I think when you look at USC, like I've been on it, you know, as you know, the only thing I would say is like, you know, Jason Smith said, and I pointed this out too, like Notre Dame does not play well in LA in November, like across coaches for both teams. 2018, the 2018 USC team, that defense might've been one of the worst defenses on paper that Notre Dame's ever faced. And they found a way to struggle bus, right? They had multiple walk-ons playing in the secondary that day. And they struggle bus. Now, different teams, different situations. I don't love doing the thing where it's like it's throughout history, because 2018 has nothing to do with 2024. I don't love doing that. Just like I don't love they've laid an egg two straight years in games where they kind of shouldn't. I don't love doing that because new coaching staff as well, new players. You have Riley Leonard now. I'm just kind of like, when you say where the losses come from, I do understand when people have that emotion of like, man, I just feel like they're going to find a way to drop one. I understand that piece. So like that's where I'm coming from an analysis point of view. I agree with you. Like, I don't see it. I don't see it. Like, I asked you ahead of the time, what would I pick over under? Like, I think it'll be 11-1. I do think they'll drop a game somewhere, but I think they're going to go 11-1 this year. And if you put a gun to my head, I would say it's more likely undefeated than like 10-2. Just because I think the team is good, and B, it's like you said, I don't think anyone challenges them the way that other schools challenge them. Like, you, Ohio State, they can just out-talent you. I don't think there's a team that can just out-talent Notre Dame this year. I mean, when has DJ Uiagalelei been the answer to any question? Especially against Notre Dame. Like, they have so much – Notre Dame has so much success against him. I just don't see Florida State. Like, I want – like, that 9.5 for Florida State. Man, I just think you watched Florida State play. They were so dependent on the versatility of Jordan Travis, and that isn't there. I have big questions about them. I think Louisville, they could have a good offense. I mean, a good defense, but I just don't think that they can duplicate what they did in the portal offensively last year. I just don't see that coming. And so I just have a hard time.
The one thing I want to point about the USC trip too is, I know that like they have had struggles there in LA, but they haven't lost. You know, like they've still
we're talking about record. We're not talking about looking pretty.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that they might not like not have their A game, because they might not. But it's not like you're going up against Caleb Williams without your A game. You know what I mean? Like so that's why I just think that USC is this USC team to me I think there's a far greater chance that they are a Clay Helton type of team than they are year one of Lincoln Riley. Right. Or, I mean, and they're definitely nowhere close to Pete Carroll. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's the one thing that I would say, like, I just am going to have a hard time unless, I mean, we'll see what they look like during the season, but I don't know. I think that they are still just dangerously thin at so many spots and like a couple of injuries. And it's just like, you know, Jenga, it's all gone.
Yeah. The other part that's kind of lurking is their travel.
Yeah.
Like that's something that they just aren't used to. They aren't used to it. And now it's like not all West Coast stuff. Like they got to go to Minnesota. They got to go. I think they're going to Maryland. I think it is. Or they're going east a lot more than normal. I don't know if it's Maryland specifically. Should have checked that. Bad radio there. But it's like they're going east a lot, and they're coming back, and they're going east again. And it's just like they're not used to that. And I think that's always been an advantage that USC has, is when they come in, when Notre Dame comes in, they've been flying all over. Like the 2018 team especially. Like the end of that season was crazy, right? They had flown to San Diego, and they went back to Notre Dame. Then they went to New York. Then they went back to LA. They were flying all over the country, and it was like, man, that's not a great way to end a season. Just like they're going to get tired, and they were. They were tired, and they were a much better team than USC that year, but they played down to it. Yes, they do. They have at Maryland, at Michigan, at Minnesota. Thank you, CFB Hertz, for that. So they do go to Maryland. I wasn't wrong about that. That's all the way across the country, right? Like you're going and you know, you might say, well, that's in October, and they don't play Notre Dame until later. That stuff adds up over time, especially if you're accumulating losses while that's happening. So I think the new schedule thing is something to really monitor. For USC and how they respond to those things. George Gipp, from the grave. Thank you for being here, George. We really appreciate it. he's wondering if the offense, if Notre Dame's offense is going to be ready for Texas A&M. I think that A&M defense is lurking, right? They've got the Purdue transfer at defensive end. I think their pass rush is going to be as good as Notre Dame faces this year, if not the best pass rush they face this year. And that's kind of there, right? And if we're talking 11-1, you know, you do have that opener in Texas. It's a night game, right? It's going to be the primetime game. They announced it. Game day is going to be there. I don't mind the game day thing. I think that the fact that the game's going to be at night really helps in terms of weather. It's not a 7:30 thing. It's a 6:30 thing because that's central time. But it won't be as hot as it would be if it was like a 3:30 game, you know? So that will help. But if you drop the opener, now we're talking about you got to run the table now to go 11-1, and you can't drop a game to go 10-2. And at that point, you drop another one, depending on who it's to. 10-2 is probably good enough to get into the top 12 or whatever. Maybe it's got to be top 11.
Not a guarantee, though. Not a guarantee,
especially if it's like you've lost to A&M and
you better be kicking the crap out of everybody.
You better be, and you got to hope for Florida State to be good or USC to be good. You got to hope for Louisville to be good, right? Like you got to beat a good team. Yeah. I think that's where people get nervous, right? I think it would be, in my opinion, I think people would be so much more apt to say, oh yeah, like a 10.5, I'll take the over if the A&M game was like October 21st, you know, where there was like, they knew there's a good chance Notre Dame's going to be, you know, 6-0 going into that game. Right. What do you think about that? What do you think about kind of the challenge that A&M presents just overall there?
I mean, it's going to be, I think it's going to be really challenging. Right. And I really think that how Notre Dame is able to kind of run the ball is going to dictate a lot of how they do in that game, because if they have to, you know, whether it's whoever's playing quarterback, it's going to be rather minor, but like no one's going to be able to thrive on 3rd and 8 like a bunch of times against A&M's defense. You're just not.
Yeah.
So they need to get into, you know, 3rd and medium, 3rd and short as much as possible, which means they need to run the ball well, and they need to, you know, put points on the board. But I mean, at the same time, Notre Dame could struggle a lot to put points on the board and still win the game, because I don't know how, like, I think Texas A&M is probably not going to put up too many points against Notre Dame, right? So, I mean, I don't know what the total is going to be in that game, but I'm going to guess it's going to be low. Like, it's I don't think that's going to be a high-scoring game, right? So, we'll see where they're at. And then also, too, like, there's always, like, the weird stuff in terms of like what's the health of all these teams going into it? Because think about how big, like, not having Jarrett Patterson for that Ohio State you know, a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now A&M, they already lost one of their transfer receivers, Jabari Barber. He's out for months. He's not going to play in that first game. I don't even know if he's going to play this year, to be honest, but like, so that was one of the guys that they were kind of counting on to be a guy, and he's not going to be a guy. So I don't know, like, where are they at in terms of health and camp and stuff like that? Where's Notre Dame at? There's all these kind of things that go into it. But I mean, it's, I think the line is like, I think that line's probably going to end up being like close to a pick 'em when they finally get it. And I would say this, like, Notre Dame is a better team, which, it, you know, if it's a pick'em, that means that on a neutral field they'd be like a slight favorite, right? So I think that if it wasn't that's the thing, that's why I'm like, don't play Texas A&M on week one of this. You know, you're just you're asking for a tough time, right? Yeah. It's just like you play like a not great Louisville team in 2019, and it's like, it's hard to kind of get into that game, because it's like, think about those linebackers, all those new linebackers, and how they struggled in that game. And what's it going to be like for these offensive linemen when they get in that game? That's why it's just like, it's going to be huge to just, it's going to be huge to run the football.
You guys, on Power Hour, there was a question about the A&M game. Who had the advantage of Riley Leonard, you know, playing against his coach and the coach playing against Riley Leonard? I think the advantage always goes to the coach in that situation. He's a coach, right? Like he knows how to take advantage of things better than a quarterback does, right? Just by nature of the fact that he's in charge of that, right? Like that's something. But the thing that kind of to me mitigates all that is the fact that Denbrock and Marcus Freeman have played against Mike Elko teams. Right. Denbrock's played against them when he was at A&M, right, with their defensive coach. Marcus Freeman played against a Mike Elko team last year, right? Mike Elko has never coached against a Notre Dame team with a Mike Denbrock as the offensive coordinator or Riley Leonard as the quarterback, right? It's one thing to know what those weaknesses are, but you don't know how Mike Denbrock is going to use that player in this offense with those weapons, right? Like Notre Dame can use the Duke film to prep for this because his defensive structure is the defensive structure, right? Whereas he can obviously get ready for Notre Dame's defense that way, which is, you know, that's valuable as well. But he can't get ready for Notre Dame's offense, really. And, like, to me, anytime a team gets a new offensive coordinator, I feel like there's a bump in the first 4 or 5 games because all the prep, all that stuff, you don't really know what a team is going to do with a completely new regime. There's always something there. And I think, like, Charlie Weiss really benefited from that in 05, where it's like, no, he had no tendencies with them. He had no tendencies with how he were going to use the wideouts or the running game or the tight ends or whatever, right? Like everything was kind of new. I think Notre Dame has that going for them in this game. I think Mike Denbrock at Notre Dame with Riley Leonard is much more of an unknown than whatever Mike Elko is going to be doing. So something to monitor.
Yeah, just so CFB Hertz asked too about Elko didn't bring his defensive coordinator with him. Tyler Santucci, he's the defensive coordinator at Georgia Tech now, so Notre Dame's going to see him again this year. Mm-hmm. But he hired Jay Bateman, who's like he was the North Carolina defensive coordinator, but got fired by Mac Brown, yeah. And he was very successful at Army, and he has long ties to Elko. Like they have a long relationship. So I mean the thing is that Elko is gonna have a lot of influence.
It's his system.
Yeah. So he's gonna have a lot of influence there, and they're gonna be and the big difference between like say Bateman at North Carolina and you know, at Texas A&M is he's got more dudes. Mm-hmm. They got more dudes, right? So that's going to be the thing. But I would say too, though, if I was going to say what is probably the projected weakness for A&M is they're not going to be as good at linebacker this year as they were. And they're a little thin there. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to be as good at defensive tackle as they were. So they're probably not going to be as good against the run there because, you know, they have to move. They've moved a couple guys inside to kind of replace some guys. You know, they lost obviously Walter Nolan, who was, you know, a 5-star, like top 5 player in the country kind of guy who went to Ole Miss. Like, and they had McKinney was the other guy from last year too. Like they were very good at defensive tackle last year. They're not going to be as good. It's like, they could be just phenomenal against the pass, but how good are they going to be against the run? That's why it's like going to be key for like Notre Dame to be able to run the ball against them. And I think that might be somewhere where they might actually have an advantage.
Yep. And that's where they need to have an advantage, you know, is they need to be able to lean on that. It's always the easier part of the two to be a good running team because you're just going straight ahead. You can use Riley Leonard in that case, right? Like if things aren't as crisp as you want with the wide receivers at that point in the season, just run your quarterback, right? And he's obviously a very big weapon there, as Mike Elko knows, but it's just like there's only so much you can do when they're going to design runs for a quarterback. It's one thing to try to keep someone in the pocket like Notre Dame's doing with Caleb Williams, but when Notre Dame is designing runs for your quarterback, that becomes much a much bigger task. Design is important for your website, for your highlight reel, for your engagement video, whatever it might be. The design matters, and you want to focus in on that with VSRMediaCompany.com, founded by Notre Dame football pregame host and Emmy Award-winning anchor Fahid Saadrazadeh. VSR Media provides professional and cinematic video and photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or are aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media specializes in short and long-form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior and sports photos. Contact them at VSRMediaCompany.com. Mention Irish Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106. A couple other notes, items on for Notre Dame opponents. USC's total is 7.5. I think we kind of referenced that already. We've got, Georgia Tech at 5.5, Virginia at 4.5, Purdue 4.5, Stanford 3.5, Louisville and A&M are at 8.5. What do you make of Louisville? Do you think they're going to be good? Louisville?
I think they're going to be pretty good. Like, they're going to be like, I think probably around where they were last year. They have some more questions. They've added as many transfers as anyone. Like, they're basically a team full of mercenaries, like they were last year, and they found enough guys though to make it happen. But like, they lost their tackles to basically graduation or whatever. They weren't NFL guys, but like, they lost those guys to graduation and they've replaced them with guys in the portal. And we know that, like, you're not finding studs there. So there's that. I think that Tyler Shough, who's was at Texas Tech, and before that he was at Oregon, I would say he's different, but I don't even know if I would say he's better than Plummer at quarterback. He's just different. And they need like a bunch of transfer wide receivers to hit. They need some transfers to hit in their front seven on the defensive line. They like lost some of the guys that they got too. So I don't know if that was like a money thing or whatever, but it's weird that some of the guys who were like their biggest additions have already left. They're going to have a good secondary. The defense is going to be good. It's going to be like a top 20-ish type defense again. And I mean, my guess is Brom is going to have to, like, if you think about it, that game last year, Brom coached a heck of a game. He was, had the perfect plan, really. Right. Like really did a heck of a job and basically told like Plummer, like, do not be yourself.
Right.
Do not be yourself. And that was one of the reasons, because that was how they were going to lose the game, is if Plummer was like taking chances and stuff like that. And they didn't. I think he's a good coach. So it's I think they're going to be a pretty good team, but also too, you're not playing them back to back to back, like how it was set up last year. You're not playing them at Louisville. And I don't know. I do think they just lost a couple guys who were starters who were supposed to be starters this year in their front seven to the portal. So, or three guys actually. So, because considering one of the other guys was already transferring. So, I don't know what that is all going to mean. But I think probably like they're probably like going to be 8-9 win team. So like pretty, okay. I think that's pretty fair, but that's also partially because if you look at how they kind of won their 10 games last year, like that the Notre Dame game was by far their like best win.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of games where they were like hanging on by for dear life, hanging on by a thread. So I don't know. I mean anywhere from 7 to 10 wins is there. I mean, I would never bet on that game on that. I think it's, you know, I think they're going to be a total enigma until.
Is there a team of the teams I just listed, like the Georgia Tech's being mentioned in the chat as a team that 5.5 people think like that's an over bet. Is there a team on there that you feel like they're a little bit friskier? Right. A little bit watch out for them kind of deal. I've seen people kind of mention Purdue on that front as well. Do you have anything? Is there anyone that kind of jumps out? It's like, I think I'd watch out for that team.
Purdue, I don't know quite yet because they really like they took a bunch of transfers that didn't play at certain places. It's like, how good are these guys?
Hudson Card is still there, right? I think he had multiple years. Okay.
Yeah. So he's still there. I just don't know how good their offense is going to be. I think their defense will probably be better. But you got to remember, too, like everyone is raving about, like, you know, Nick Scorton, who's the Purdue transfer to A&M. It's like, well, they don't have him this year. So it's like they lost basically their best player who was supposed to come back. I don't know. They might be a little frisky, but I mean, they should have no business beating Notre Dame, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think that Stanford and UVA, if you look at how UVA was at the end of last year, like they were improving, you know? And I think if you look at kind of where they were, I wouldn't be kind of, and they're six, I think, in returning production. And I think that matters for them.
Yeah, like
that definitely matters for them. So they're at, you know, 4.5. They could be a bowl team. Like, I think they could be a bowl team. I think that Stanford is 3.5. And if you look at their schedule, you totally understand why. That is one of those schedules where you look at, you're like, where are the wins here? Like, it's really tough. They got a bad first ACC schedule. It just seemed like they just kind of got stuck with a lot of, you know, tough matchup. So I don't know. In saying that, I think they're second in returning production. I think they're going to be better than they were last year. A key for them will be quarterback. And if just the O-line could be just like half decent, you know, they were just atrocious last year. But Troy Taylor's a really good coach. He's a good coach. So I think that is a game where you don't want to sleepwalk through that game because they're going to like throw like a ton of like trick stuff. Like it's going to be out there. So I would agree too with what these people are saying about Georgia Tech. Like their defense was so bad last year that I think they'll be, I mean, you know, I mentioned Santucci's there and they'll be better. They'll probably be a bit better on defense. And I do think like, on offense, Haynes King is like, he's one of the few like dual threats that Notre Dame is going to play this year and he can really run. And so it's going to be a little bit of a challenge there, but I also too, like that's a game where they might be like 7-5 good lot. Like they're not going, I would be shocked if they're like winning 9 games and like, would be in a position to really give Notre Dame a tough game. Because the other thing is that like that game is at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's not at on campus there. Right. So they don't really get the benefit of, you know, that being a true road game.
Yeah. We're going to move on to our next segment, the If You Build It segment. We are building the perfect Notre Dame wide receiver. And this segment is brought to you by Ben Marketing. You want to build your website. You want to build up a website like we are building a perfect wide receiver. Go to Ben Marketing if you're ready for a new website but not sure where to start. Let the experts at Ben Marketing help with experience in working with Fortune 500 companies and small businesses alike. They'll build you a stunning website and take care of all the marketing tasks so you can focus on running your business. No more stress. Just leave it to the experts at Bend Marketing. Visit bendyourmarketing.com/ISD to get started. Don't forget to mention ISD to enjoy 10% off your first project. Jamie, the perfect wide receiver at Notre Dame. What do you want him to look like? Again, go, for people, we're going back to basically 2010. The 2010s, we're not going to go too far back here. We're just going to use those wide receivers. You know what? Let's go back further for this because we need to include guys like Samardzija and Stovall. Let's go back to the 90s. How about that for this one? Because we might want to include like Derek Mays. You might want to have on the docket. So, what do you want your perfect wide receiver to look like size wise? What player do you want him to? What kind of, you know? What do you want him to look like for linebackers? We chose Jalen Smith for this.
I mean, size wise, I don't think you could pick anyone but Chase Claypool. The guy's a freak. He was like anyone who's ever seen Claypool in person too. Like he is different. Like he is just like, I mean, obviously Notre Dame has had a lot of big receivers, big body guys, you know, Michael Floyd was also like just beast of a guy, but even compared Floyd to Claypool, he just wasn't as big. Like he just wasn't as big. Wasn't as like jacked. Like Claypool just had like a body that it was just like, this guy is just like a absolute freak show. He was just a total freak show. So I mean, and he's like, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 220 pounds, and just, you know, we don't even have to get into the speed. We're just talking about the body. He's got long levers, just a massive, massive dude. Looks like a guy who could play like defensive end, really. So I mean, I'd go with Claypool.
You definitely want him to look like that. I think in the chat, there were some people who mentioned Michael Floyd. I was thinking of Kevin Austin just because of his physique. I mean, he's physically very built, but I think Claypool is the answer. That's what you want it to look like, right? Like just kind of a lot of things going your way, stout. I mean, the guy 238 at the combine, right? That's what it looks like. So let's go with the Claypool for size. What about hands? What kind of hands you want? My first thought is you go Golden Tate here. The guy had a pair of hands that you just couldn't believe. He would snatch the ball out of the air. I mean, it's like hands high pointing, Hail Marys, right? Catching the ball at the catch point and just holding the ball there. He doesn't even have to bring it into his body. He can't get the ball out of his hands. You know, I just thought he had the best pair of hands of any Notre Dame wide receiver in recent memory. I got to go with Golden Tate here. Do you have another answer?
I don't think you can go with anyone but Golden Tate. Like, man, like just exactly like you said. And for to be someone at his size and to win the number of contested catches that he did at that size, like, I mean, even if you're talking about when he was in the NFL, like it's him and Steve Smith as like smaller, like sub, you know, sub 6 foot contested catch guys. I can't think of other guys who really, you know, can compare really. So, George Gipp, Claypool was a 4-star, by the way. Doesn't matter. But
he was actually a high 4-star.
Yeah, he went to the opening and stuff. He was a pretty hyped guy. But Samardzija was mentioned in here too. I have Samardzija in a different category. So I just, but he did obviously pretty soft mitts too.
Yeah. Speed.
Can we just go say Will Fuller? And just
move we're going to say like Will just, Fuller.
There's no one has, there hasn't been anyone who was as close to him in terms of just like that electricity, that kind of speed. I mean, I guess you could say Rocket, like him and Rocket Ismail. Like, if someone said Rocket Ismail, sure. But just even the way that Rocket was used, like, it's like he wasn't even really used as like almost like a traditional receiver. So I have no problem with making it a slash Fuller Rocket if you want to do that. But like, it's, yeah, to me, like, Fuller just stands out. Just, you can't get it out of your head, him cooking, you know, Adoree Jackson. I think about it a lot. It's just one of those things. It's like, man, he really did just absolutely blow by him.
There's Rocket, right? Here's the thing with Rocket. Most of his plays that you're thinking of right now, you're thinking of the kickoff returns against Michigan.
Return game, yeah.
You're thinking of the punt return against Colorado. You're thinking of kickoff return against Miami, right? You're thinking of a bunch of runs, right, that he had. Where is the one, and this is the nature of the offense, where is the one where it's like, man, he ran a post and just lit this dude on fire? Like, a good player, you know? Like you, it doesn't really exist, right? Because they just didn't have that. And Fuller, I mean, you got guys with 10-yard cushions in their pedal, and he's running by them. I'm telling you, some of his, like, posts and go routes are just as impressive as you'll ever see from any player, from any program, just barbecuing guys. Love watching it.
I just want to add this in too, because as Rajon mentioned, you know, Rocket with the ball in his hands, because I think that's where you would put Rocket, right, is after the catch.
Yeah.
Rocket was just born too early. If he played in this kind of more modern era, this guy would be catching bubble screens and doing all this and just killing people.
Getting jets.
Like, I wish we got to see him. It's like one of those things too, where you're like, if Michael Vick played in this era, you'd be like, he'd be a different kind of player. And there's obviously a lot of, you know, a lot of Notre Dame guys you could say that about too, right? Like, Jarius Jackson, always a guy that I think, like, man, this guy would be way better in this era than he was in his era. But Rocket, for sure, after the catch, the ball in his hands. And that's the thing. Like, in the return game, you saw it, obviously. And because he had that electric speed, but he also was, like, a guy who could, like, he could run away from people, but he was, like, strong enough to break tackles and stuff too.
He would take direct shots and bounce off them. It was actually one of it, and Golden Tate kind of had this skill too. The small guys, he would get, like, the touchdown against Colorado, and the that was called back. He gets hit square by Chad Brown, who was an NFL linebacker for like a very long time, a good NFL linebacker. Yes, and he hits him square, and Rocket just bounces off him and goes. He was incredible. There was another one that he runs like an inside run against Penn State, and lowers his helmet and bucks this guy, and then he keeps going. For a small guy, incredibly elusive from a tackle breaking standpoint. Very similar to Golden Tate. Do we want to give Rocket run after catch?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give him run after catch. You mentioned Samardzija. What category are you giving to Samardzija there?
I'm going body control.
Okay.
Like, he's the guy that it's like, we're throwing it, I got to get it into, like, the corner of the end zone. I'm putting it in the sideline. Like, we're throwing it up, and this guy's got to come down with it when he's got a guy draped all over him. Like, he's the guy who could contort his body and make the diving catch and, like, tuck it in. Like, you know, you think about that first big touchdown catch, or maybe it was the second one against Pitt in that opener. That season, but like, he just had just phenomenal body control because he was such a smooth athlete. And, you know, obviously you could say, like, because you're not going to give him the hands part, you're not going to say, like, you know, the high point, but to me, no one had a better body control than him.
Yeah. He had those kind of instincts with his body. Like, he knew how to, he knew when to get small. He knew when to kind of shift his hips a little bit. Like some of his run after catch stuff, like, I would include in body control too. And just how, like, he could run a slant, catch it, stop, and get outside. Like, he was very good at that. Like, the high pointing, like you say, He was that was like a body control thing for me. And so he did. I don't think he had better hands than Golden Tate did, but I think he was like he's probably second in that. So his, but his for a baseball player, I thought his instincts as a wide receiver in terms of how to use his body were top notch. And so I think that's a good shout. I would go for that as well. Next, the kind of playmaking clutch, right? That I kind of put him in the same kind of category. I'm going Derek Mays for this, and so that's why I wanted to do it because he actually had like a good amount of drops. Like if you go back and watch, he'll drop a pass, right? But he had some of the best numbers against like really good corners that you kind of forget about that stuff. Like cooked Samari Roll with Tom Krug as his quarterback, right? He's cooking Samari Roll in the Orange Bowl. Cooked Bryant Westbrook against Texas a number of times. Cooked Chris Hudson in the 94 Fiesta Bowl. Chris Hudson won the Thorpe Award that year. He gave him over 100 yards, and I think he had a couple of touchdowns in that game. Ty Law, cooking Ty Law. He just had some of the best kind of games in those big moments. Sean Springs at Ohio State in 1995. Like, just, man, he's just doing it against, like, top five picks in the draft. His catch against Michigan that gets wiped out because Michigan goes down and kicks the field goal. Like one of the best catches in the back of the end zone in that game. Clutch play. His catch against Boston College kind of to complete the comeback. He didn't make the touchdown catch, but they hit the long post to him. He's doing the thing where he's like turning his body. Great catch, great clutch catch, kind of his coming out party against Boston College. That kind of gets wiped out from memory because Boston College win the game with the field goal. But I just feel like he had so many of those moments where it's like, man, what a big time catch in a big time moment against a big time player. And so like attitude, playmaking, clutchness, I'm giving it Derek Mays.
I like that. I think that's probably the right one because if you're looking for like, yeah, like a big game receiver, it's tough to find somebody that I think you would say is better than him. I mean, obviously there's a lot of these guys that it's kind of sad that Notre Dame hasn't had guys that we could talk about on the current team that are like this because man, they had a lot of guys who were just fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Last one, blocking. Who do you have for this? I have a sneaky one. For blocking. Best blocker.
Blocking. Wow. I didn't even think about blocking.
It's important, Jamie. You gotta have it. You gotta have it. I have a good one.
I think Mo Stovall probably. Like Mo Stovall was a good blocker.
That's good.
He was a good blocker. A guy who gave good effort. Obviously, he was big. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I know there's like I'm missing someone who's obvious. I don't know. Who you got?
Rajon got it. It's Lake Dawson. 100%. It's Lake Dawson.
Very underappreciated player.
But you know what? Here's a fun thing to do. If you want an excuse to go back and watch the 93 Florida State game, watch that game and just watch Lake Dawson blocking Corey Sawyer. He has him in hell. All game. Corey Sawyer wants no part of sticking his head in there, and Lake Dawson just beats him up for the whole game. It is funny. It is so funny how, man, he is just riding him. It's tremendous stuff. Derek Mays was good in that game as well, but there's just a lot of good. Rajon nailed it. There's just a lot of good stuff from him. So, Lake Dawson got to rep him. Longtime wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs as well. Okay, so we've got size.
I want to add one thing because I don't think you can't have one of these lists and not have Michael Floyd be one of the things. And I honestly, too, if I need one play,
I need a first down for the national championship.
I need a first down, or it's fourth and five at the 6-yard line, fourth and goal at the 6-yard line. I'm throwing the ball to Michael Floyd. Like, I know he is going, I know they know the ball's going to him. He knows the ball's going to him. I think he's come, he's gonna get it. He's the guy that I want. He's the guy that with the most grit, where that if you threw it short of the goal line, he is going to will his way through it. He is, because he was a little bully like that too. So I think he's kind of got to be on there. Like, he was, his last 2 years, totally underappreciated because they didn't have the quarterback play. But like, you wish that Jimmy Clausen would have stayed another year for multiple reasons, but just to have another year with him and Michael Floyd, oh my, like that would have just, Floyd would have just had, I mean, he already had 1,000 yards, he had 7 or 9 catches, whatever, but like, he might have had like 1,400 yards if Clausen was throwing him the ball that year.
Yeah, that's I think that's fair take. I think that's a fair take. Floyd was the problem. I would have no problem throwing it the ball to Michael Floyd. The only thing I would say is Tommy Rees did kind of lose the Tulsa game throwing the ball to Michael Floyd, although that was absolutely
that was a bad throw. Pass. Let's be honest, it was pass. A bad throw. It was not. You know what?
It was not a good throw.
I can tell you too, like, even though you know, I mean, there's a lot of things he can get on BK for, but the idea of being like, hey, we're going to throw one up to Michael Floyd, it wasn't a horrible idea. It was just a bad throw.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it at all. I really didn't. It's just, you know, don't throw it there, basically. It's just
very funny, too, to get used to it. And then he never tried
it. And then he never did it again.
He never tried anything like that again.
We didn't have to get used to it.
He never tried it again. Yeah.
So, all right. That was fun. All right. We'll end it there. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please hit the like. Please hit subscribe. Please hit the notification bell. So you know where it is. We are going live. We'll be back next week talking more Notre Dame football. Enjoy the weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Keep hitting and hustling.